welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. Welcome back to Inspired Island. We're bound to have a fascinating conversation today because we have Susan Ross in the studio. Susan is a licensed clinical social worker with over 40 years of experience, with a practice and an office based right here on Vashon Island. I'm excited to chat with Susan about her work to support islanders on their mental health journey and with addressing and overcoming trauma, along with so much more. Here in the year 2025, I think these types of conversations are even more important than ever. So I'm so excited that you're here on the show, Susan.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you.
And now, Susan, could you talk to people in your own words what you do here and a little bit about your practice?
Okay. Yeah, I have an office up near the IGA. And I have two arenas for my work. One is straight therapy, which is talk therapy. I do EMDR. I do a lot of energy work. And then the other aspect is I have a neurofeedback clinic and a separate neurofeedback technician that runs that for me. So I like to combine the two when possible.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you've said a couple buzzwords that I've heard about, but I might not know fully. And I'm guessing some folks listening might not as well. Could you talk about neurofeedback, what that is?
Sure. Neurofeedback is a process where the brain communicates with itself to rebalance and create new pathways. That's kind of the term most people understand. I've tried to describe neurofeedback in many different places over the last 15 years. And I think the most direct thing to do is to give like a 2 or 3 minute overview of what it's like to have it.
Mm, perfect.
Yeah. So somebody comes in and I'll get into what it addresses later, but we set up a protocol this is a symptom-based project. So we ask 80 questions, and based on those questions, a protocol is created so that electrical impulses go from the brain into the computer through some cords, some leads. Nothing goes into the brain whatsoever. And so the electrical impulses from your brain go into the computer and it interfaces with sound and visual fractals. And so what somebody does is you come in, you answer all the questions. And it's a fascinating array of questions because so many are physiologically based. So we come in for the first session, sit down in a comfortable chair in a dedicated room, and there's nothing anybody can think or say during this process that will affect it whatsoever. This is the brain communicating with itself so that you get 3 to 5 sensors put on your head, and then they connect to the machine, and then the electrical impulses from your brain start the process, and then we start to see all these fractals and hear sounds. It's the music of your own mind. So, for example, if someone's super anxious, what I notice is that the sounds are disjointed, discontinuous, and kind of sharp, sort of like, and as soon as the brain doesn't like discontinuous or harsh or sharp. So as soon as the brain waves just go a little tiny bit in the calmer direction, if that's what this protocol requires, then the music starts to get a little more mellifluous and contiguous, and you just get to sit there and listen. For some protocols, for many of them, you're listening and you're looking. So the fractal images on the screen are also representative of the electrical impulses that you're sending into the computer so that they're really mesmerizing.
And how long is each session?
The sessions run about 45 to 50 minutes because we have to do the hookup and clean up. But the sessions themselves are probably 33 minutes, approximately.
Okay.
Different protocols have a little different configurations of where the sensors are placed and how many times they're changed during the course of a session. They're changed twice in many cases. But in some, you get one setting, and then that's it for the whole session.
Wow. So it's totally passive. You're not
completely passive. Huh. Nothing. There's nothing to do before or after.
To stay awake. And so what is this treat?
Such an array of things. When I first got into it, the focus was really on trauma, PTSD, anxiety, depression. It's also really, really effective with bipolar. Which is one of the more difficult things to really get a hold of. The bottom line, what neurofeedback does is it increases capacity and decreases reactivity. And everything that goes on in our brain is either increasing or decreasing some sort of energy. And so that's the bottom line here. It's just working with the energies. Yeah. So somebody's experience is just sitting back in this comfortable chair and you have a little mouse and you can right click when a certain color comes up on the screen, which is a way to help people stay attentive and awake. And if somebody's not capable of doing that, that's not a problem. And so that brings me to the next arena, which I've been having more and more experience with, which is all sorts of brain issues. Okay, so brain issues like strokes, concussions. I've had a few people that have had brain cancer and brain surgeries, and it's pretty miraculous to watch somebody come in who can't remember that they just walked in the door and be able to remember yesterday or last week.
And how long has this therapy been around?
I know that it was really starting to grow in the 80s, and the person that devised this program that I use was a therapist first. So his first job, he was assigned to do neural feedback in an addiction hospital, actually. And so saw how amazing it was. Most of the patients at that particular hospital were Native American. And so, you know, alcohol is a harsher trigger in many ways for Native Americans. Anyway, what they discovered was if somebody's in a program of recovery and has neural feedback, the chance that they're going to go back and drink again is only 5%. That's radical. That's really cool.
Yeah. Have you noticed a growing interest on the island in this?
I do. And I also get calls from people that their brain surgeons have mentioned it or, you know, they get information from other places. So I feel like a lot of people don't know what it is more than knowing what it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, like I said, what I really love about it is that it decreases reactivity. So I also can work a lot with neurodivergent folks. And I want to clarify only on symptoms that they feel are interfering with their quality of life. I don't see neurodivergence as some sort of disorder. But I do see some of the behaviors that can occur can really cause somebody to not be able to participate fully in something they may want to participate fully within.
Right.
So
patient-driven, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And with the neurofeedback, do you see it having a greater place right now with everything that we're grappling with, like societally, when it comes to political, economic? There's just so many forces right now happening that just makes life a little bit challenging for so many of us. I'd love your thoughts on what you think about it in this moment.
Okay, right. A couple of things come to mind first. If somebody has already been traumatized in their past and has PTSD, whether they've been treated or not, what's going on politically right now very likely reactivates that trauma, a sense of being invaded and lack of certainty and safety that's prevalent and, you know, predominant, really, really undermines people's sense of well-being. And I think, I mean, we even notice it with how aggressive people are becoming and discourteous, impatient. It's all fear-driven. Everyone's afraid. No matter where they are on the political spectrum, everyone's afraid. And I see that really driving. And so certainly neural feedback's great for this because, like I was saying, the capacity that it increases is your capacity to think, to pause, to not react, to not go, you know, and do something harmful to yourself or another.
Yeah, and it's an interesting way to get at it, too, because somebody mentioned, all right, I might maybe read this. An idea made it in its way into my brain at some point that oftentimes our experience, it's generated internally, and then we come up with, like, the anxious thoughts or whatever to fit what we're feeling physiologically. I only recently had an experience, and it was when there was a minor little earthquake that some people felt on Vashon, probably closer to a month and a half ago now. And I remember waking up feeling a bit frantic. And I didn't experience consciously the earthquake, but my body knew. And so I was thinking, like, okay, I feel anxious, but what am I anxious about? Like, coming up with some story in my mind. And then later online, I read, oh, there was an earthquake. And I said, oh, so, you know, my body was telling me something.
Absolutely. But... because we are connected to the earth.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It really is. And so, you know, this also prompts me to think about the vast array of ages this serves. My youngest client was 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, really what anyone has to be able to do is to sit still-ish for 2 minutes. Okay. And so even as young as 18 months or a child that was really brain damaged because of surgery at age 3, they can sit there for 2 minutes if there's a sticker on the side waiting for them.
Yeah.
Or older kids that are ADD. Or ADHD, that can't sit still for a second. You just line up those quarters and they get one every 2 minutes. It's amazing how that's where the focus comes in. And we've been really successful with young kids. And it's also a great modality in the sense that for kids and teens who are often, by the time they even make it to a therapist's office, their parents have been so frightened. They've been asked so many questions and so much is being demanded of them. What are you doing? Why did you do that? What are you thinking? What weren't you thinking? Whatever. That to be brought into another adult by the parent and say, here, you know, they've got some sane trepidation.
Mm.
And so there really isn't a lot of talking that's required, like none for neural feedback.
Yeah.
Right? And so for folks that have some neurodivergent issues and any kind of brain damage issues, we do a game rather than the protocol setting. And so it's just, they just have to push right click for a little game. And if somebody's not capable of right clicking, all they have to do is watch it. Because they do have the sensors on their head that's going into the computer and it's sending the information to BrainPaint, which is the system that I use. And then a specific protocol is created for that person.
Okay. And how does somebody know if they're listening whether or not they're a good candidate? Is pretty much everybody a good candidate?
You know, if you've got things that are interfering with the quality of your life, you're most likely either overactivated, like anxious, or underactivated, like depressed.
Mm.
Bipolar is a combo.
Mm.
You know, anybody that's had any kind of brain issues, concussions, even years past. I've worked with folks that have had car accidents or concussions more than 10 years ago, and it's still very effective in bringing their brain system back on board more fully.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how many sessions for the average case?
Okay, so that, of course, varies radically. Children need fewer.
Okay.
And I would say 12 to 20
okay.
for kids.
Yeah.
Adults, sometimes it's the same. And if somebody is bipolar, if somebody's got more extensive brain damage, if somebody has a personality disorder, those all take longer. And the personality disorders take the most. That can be 70 to 90 sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is effective. It does work. But for somebody that needs neural feedback, it's effective for 95% of people that sit down in the chair. There's some people it won't work with, and we can tell that within 5 to 8 sessions. So, you know, we usually say within 5 to 8 sessions, you'll know if it's helping. The more intense somebody's symptoms are, the more quickly we see relief.
Hmm.
So if somebody's just on the ceiling with anxiety and they really just can barely breathe at times, and which is part of a panic attack, they can notice within 2 to 3 sessions.
Mm.
I've even had people say after 1, but that's, you know, not something to hold up as the expectation whatsoever. So if we see any shift at all within the first 5 to 8 sessions, then we know it can work for this person. But there, obviously, also people come in with a variety of things going on. So somebody could very well have ADD, anxiety, and PTSD.
Wow. Yeah. Right?
And so when we're talking, I mean, this is partly ferreted out in the questionnaire, but also, you know, in the interview, I'll just say, well, what's interfering right now with the quality of your life the most.
Mm.
You know, and then we talk about the different things that are affecting them and try to discern which category those might fall into. And then we'll work with the first one that's bothering them.
Mm.
And since people's brains are, you know, different aspects are intertwined, obviously, sometimes they don't need to go on. Sometimes they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't seem, it seems just based on the nature of it. Is it something that you can do in conjunction with, say, if somebody's also doing talk therapy and also maybe taking medicine for something?
Like, that's a great question. Yeah. When folks are coming in with medicine, everything's fine. They can be taking any medicine that they need. Things will show up as a bit of a change sometimes if they have a med change. People can't be high, stoned, or drunk to have a good session.
Yeah,
that's- and it's interesting with weed. Some folks can be smoking at night and still come in the next day and see improvement over time, just, you know, normally. And some won't. It just depends on that person. The only drug that absolutely will not work with neural feedback are benzos.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. And the other, you,
talk
there was
therapy?
Another aspect. Yeah, that was it. Often, you know, most people come to me because they want EMDR if they have had a trauma or some form of talk therapy. And once I get to know them, quite often I'll say, okay, it's going to really help if you can do some neural feedback too. Because EMDR does bring up the experience itself, the traumatic experience. And so if somebody has the neural feedback and it dials down the intensity and increases their capacity, then when we start doing the EMDR, it's easier for them to hold what's happening, stay in their body, really, and stay with it and not be too overwhelmed and too terrified because their brain has already dialed some things down and increased the capacity.
Mm.
So the intensity is lowered. The capacity to follow it is increased.
Ah.
So I recommend that quite frequently.
Okay. There can be some symbiosis happening. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing before I move on. EMDR, that's something I know a little bit more about, but for folks who haven't heard of it, can you explain EMDR?
Sure. It's called eye movement reprocessing desensitization. EMDR. Desensitization reprocessing. That's it. Anyway, it's a bilateral intervention, which basically means a person can look to the left and to the right, and it helps them unlock part of their brain where the trauma is stored. Because generally, when we have a really terrifying experience, we hold it in the nonverbal part of our brain. So you can talk all you want about it, but if you can't, right, get in there and unlock that part, people don't get it. You know, like, for example, if somebody's in a fire and they're standing at the window, you know, and the firemen and women are down below, the person will be thinking possibly, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die. Now, they are rescued, but the I'm going to die, I'm going to die is still locked in. So they are now living with a sense of panic that they don't know that that's the thought, right? And so with the EMDR, it's been discovered that so any kind of bilateral stimulation, so if you do like a butterfly pat, like one side, then the other, because I do EMDR online with folks, and so this is what I have them do, and then I'll just say start and then stop. It's just as effective as in person, I've discovered.
Mm.
And so for the EMDR, what we start with is what lets them know that they're having some trouble right now. Okay, they might have a phobia to green trees. You know, if that's what they saw and locked in on when they were jumping and have no clue about that. So we start with, well, the last time you looked at a tree, what were your thoughts? You know, then we just start it. And it unravels. It's really effective. It's profoundly effective for trauma. And actually, some of the researchers and known folks that work with trauma, like Bessel van der Kolk, is a really famous guy. He wrote The Body Keeps the Score.
All right.
Yep. His two recommended forms of treatment for trauma are EMDR and neural feedback.
Okay.
So, and I was already doing both by the time I read that. I was like, oh, good for me.
I'm on the path.
I know. So it's really exciting to do EMDR.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is really cool.
Very cool. And Susan, what's your personal journey to this work? You're clearly very passionate and experienced in it, but is it something that you set out to at the beginning of your career get involved in?
Well, I set out as a teenager to become a therapist.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I went to Pitzer College, and at that point in time, their specialty was social sciences. It's one of the Claremont colleges. And went straight to grad school, University of Michigan, and then started my journey as a therapist. Somebody who was very, very fraught and ungrounded and pretty, pretty wounded.
Mm.
And I learned that I was so anxious with these folks that I couldn't tolerate their anxiety. And I actually found myself like doing like a little comedy show, telling jokes, you know, I was really not okay. So I stopped for many years and had a number of other things occur. My kids are both special need kids, highly gifted, neurodivergent, which is where that comes in. We found out that my son had ADD inattentive type when he was 16 and suicidal. And I was working at a small school on Mercer Island, just one-on-one with kids as their teacher, which was so fun. And so as soon as I noticed that he was having an issue, I took him into the director because she does the testing. She sent him to the ADD expert in the Northwest on Mercer Island. And yeah, he got diagnosed. And then, of course, I did.
That's how it usually happens.
Yes. So, you know, so that's where my interest really started to blossom. And those kids that I was working with at ETC, Educational Tutoring and Counseling, which isn't there anymore, many of them were neurodivergent. And so that just really got me very interested in that aspect of treatment.
Yeah.
You know, because quite frequently there's something called the ring of fire where people have high intelligence, high emotional proclivities for anxiety, depression, OCD, tendency to have addictions.
Mm.
Yeah. And so that became my arena for working. And I've really appreciated and enjoyed that. I used to work more with kids and teens. And now I focus more on adults for therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kids and teens, definitely. Neural feedback, absolutely.
Okay. And what part of the job do you like the most as personally?
I really love doing the therapy.
Mm.
I really love working with people and getting to know them. And I really see myself as a guide to help people find their own anchor points and learn how to heal themselves. And I offer, I hope, a safe relationship so that a person can stretch and say what they're not accustomed to being able to say and do and think things that are more suitable to their inner self. And that gives me such joy.
And when you got back into the therapy work, mm-hmm. did you immediately start building your own practice?
Yes, okay. I did. Yeah, I had worked before in Michigan at Children's Psychiatric Hospital, and before that at a community mental health, and I knew what I wanted to do. And the director of that school that I was working at, because the kids that I was working with, I said, "Why do you give me all the best kids?" And she's like, "I give you the most disturbed ones." And I'm like,
I love them.
And it brought me such joy to see them just flourish. I still know a couple of them. And so that's what really does it for me, is seeing people flourish and become their own self.
Very cool. And when did Vashon enter your story?
Well, I grew up in North Seattle. I grew up going up to Port Townsend to stay with my grandparents. And I always loved the ferry. And I knew I always wanted to live on one of the islands. And at one point, when I was over here with my ex-husband at Camp Sealth, he was running a Jewish family camp. And I was sitting there going, "Oh, here's my spot. This is my place." And I looked at him and I thought, he's not going to be here.
I see my vision, but you're not in.
Exactly. Exactly. He'd also told me earlier that year that I was never going to have another dog and him living together in the same house. And I started counting. How many dogs do I have left? We had a very amicable divorce, and we are friends now.
And you have a dog?
I absolutely, every minute.
Yeah, excellent. And did you immediately, when you moved to Vashon, start practicing here?
No, I didn't. I had a practice in Bellevue.
Okay.
And so I moved here in 2005.
Okay.
Right. And
so
you're
coming up on 10 years. Or 20 years. Sorry, geez.
It's okay. This month. This month is 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. 2000. I'm at the age now where my sense of time is all warped. I'm like, that can't be 20 years.
Talk to me. Anyway. Yeah. So I was tootling on over to Bellevue every day and doing my practice there. And, you know, it was really okay. I could get over there in an hour. And then Amazon hit. And then traffic got much worse. And then the pandemic. So before the pandemic, I had already opened a neural feedback office here. I opened it, I think, in like 2015. A very small one in the little strip mall that Cafe Luna's in.
Okay.
I was there for a year, and then I got the space that I'm in now. And I really like it. It's a really nice spot.
Mm.
Yeah, it's comfortable. So I already had an office here. And so when the pandemic hit, I saw my clients online.
Yeah.
That everybody was willing to do online. And that's where I learned how to do EMDR online.
Mm. And have there been any, as a small business owner also on Vashon, have there been any like major learning curves or hiccups for you in running a business here?
Yes. But I'm trying to determine, is that Vashon specific?
Oh, or just.
I think it may have, well, so much of it had to do with the pandemic, because before the pandemic, I had an office in Bellevue still, and I had two technicians going over there. I had 8 employees. I had another therapist working for me. And so when the pandemic hit, neural feedback was off the table because that's in person only. And yeah, things just kind of dwindled.
And a challenge for people sitting at home needing
absolutely
support.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I really did. I mean, for me, the pandemic was as good as it could have been, because I was still able to do my work online.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of it. Okay. What else keeps you inspired these days, Susan? Do you have any hobbies or?
Yeah, a couple of things. I moved house last summer from a large house on Burma to a smaller house in Upper Gold Beach. And the previous owner had been a master gardener and an artist. So I moved into this home with like the most incredible garden front and back and artist studio and greenhouse. And it's really sweet. I'm learning about plants. I'm taking my phone out. What's this plant? Mostly I like to make teas out of them. But the other thing that I started doing also at the very beginning of the pandemic was I started studying at Berkeley Psychic Institute, and they had gone online. They'd always been, you have to come to Berkeley to get this education, but it's online. And so I started taking classes online and ended up in a 2-year clairvoyant program, which is like 25 hours a week.
Wow.
And then I've taken a couple other programs. Now I'm in a new one, women's healing program, which is, I spend a lot of time, sometime at some point every day, I'm doing something with somebody online. And it's really fun. It's so fun.
Cool. And do you feel like it brings extra perspective to your practice here and your work?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I really do. One thing is I really know how to maintain my own space.
Mm.
And I have really felt like the first class that you learn there is called meditation, but it's really about how to find your own space, ground yourself, and allow somebody else to have their own grounded space.
Mm.
And I have really thought this would be a great thing for Therapy 101, because it's all about transference and counter-transference. And so if somebody comes in and they're, you know, scared and projecting that onto me, it doesn't hit me the way that it used to. Even though I had learned not to let it hit me, it still hit me because I didn't have an energetic protection.
Yeah.
And it just gives me more tools.
Yeah.
I mean, often I do meditations with folks if they would like, and it just gives me a much greater and deeper perspective, and it's fun.
Yeah. And it sounds like from your talking about your very beginning of your career, it sounds like you're probably an empath if you were picking up on people's energy and feeling it so deeply.
Absolutely.
So that probably...
That's why I was like knocked against the edges of a ring when somebody came in with anxiety.
Yeah.
I was like, I had no idea, you know, what that meant.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's just been really awesome. It's really just helped me not be on the back foot ever.
Yeah. And ground yourself so that you can better be of support and help
absolutely
for, yeah, other people.
Absolutely. Very and cool. When some energy hits, I know how to ground it out.
Mm.
Doesn't, you know, so that I can keep on going. And, you know, because we all do communicate with one another energetically so much that even if I thought to myself, oh, gee, that person's upset, still be nice. They could still pick up a little sharpness in me.
Mm.
And so that's not there now.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you. This has been such an awesome conversation. Anything else before we go on to the lightning round that you want to chat about?
I just really encourage folks to know that there's help. Neural feedback is so magical. And if you've been suffering with something, even for years and years, the likelihood that we can help you transform that is very high.
Mm.
And I'm always willing to speak with somebody for a few minutes on the phone and answer questions.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, message of hope. And we'll get to this again, but could you give folks a preview? Where can folks find your contact information?
Well, right now it's running in an ad every week in the Beachcomber.
Okay, there we go.
And in Destination Vashon, it's in this year's issue. Susan Ross and Associates. SusanRoss.com. www.susanross.com.
Perfect.
That's my website.
Excellent. And so now, Susan, I've given you a little prep, but we have a fun little lightning round of questions.
Okay.
To know you better.
Okay.
So the first question is, do you have a favorite beverage on Vashon?
I love to go to the tea shop.
Mm.
And I love speaking with the owner. And when I tell him whatever is going on, then he tells me what tea would be useful. And I love that. And I really like to meet up with my friends in there and have tea. And I always buy some of whatever the magic formula was for today.
Excellent. And if you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you? Like, do you have any favorite haunts?
Oh, I love to go to Fisher Pond and the beach at Gold Beach.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
I suppose that we live on an island, and it's magical, and it's a gift. And to expect people to behave like they do over town is kind of contraindicated. So let's just recognize we live in a very magic place and appreciate it and each other.
Love it. And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
I know you gave me the heads up on this, and I don't have a tradition. I go to the Strawberry Festival.
Okay.
You know, I guess the first thing that really came to my mind was meal trains.
Oh, that's nice. That's a tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. And when somebody gets sick in my neighborhood, even if I don't know them, I will put my name on the list to make a meal.
Yeah.
I really love that.
Yeah, the small town community.
Yeah, that's really what I love.
Yeah.
Strawberry Festival, it's like, can I park? I don't know. Shall I go? Shall I not?
Is it too hot for the parade or not? Yeah.
Those shopping carts, though. The first time I saw the shopping cart dance at the parade was a magical moment.
Yes.
That cracks me up.
I once saw a Halloween costume of a little kid as one of the cart dancers from Thriftway. It was excellent. And lastly, we already covered this, but can you tell folks one more time where people can find you to learn more about you and your work?
Sure. www.susanross.com. My email is susan@susanross.com.
All right.
My phone's on my website. And my office is in the IGA parking lot on the right, where the old orthodontist office used to be.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yes.
And thank you so much for joining us today, Susan. This has been really fun.
It's been really fun for me, too. Thanks so much, Grace.
Awesome. And thank you for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH LP, your island connection. Until next time, stay inspired.